It's self-improvement week here on Zen Founder. I'm rolling solo this week as Sherry has taken the kids to California for a visit with family. So here I am in Minneapolis on a Wednesday evening. I'm ready to head out to a happy hour in a couple hours with a friend of mine. And I've been thinking a lot about productivity and about how to have more output without more effort. Just how to be more productive in the same amount of time or even in fewer hours. So that's what I'm going to be talking about this week. And it's going to surround three books. I'm going to recommend three books that I think will make anyone who listens to them and implements what they have more productive. And then I'm going to give you a bonus at the end. It's my favorite books on the topic of investing. I know you might be listening to this and rolling your eyes. What does investing have to do with productivity or self-improvement? And I like to think that investing is, in essence, believing in your future self or doing your future self a favor. And in fact, they have done studies, the veritable they, those psychologists in a university somewhere, where they have asked people to put away money for an investment and they're unlikely to, but if they show them a picture of themselves that is, you know, computer aged to look like they're going to look when they're 65, then they're much, much more likely to actually take action and put money away and save it for that person. So think about your future self in all of this. The productivity is about getting more done, building your business faster, being more successful, being happier. The investing talk at the end is not going to be very long, but it's a hobby of mine. It's a pet topic that I just love to read about and talk about and think about and implement in my own life. But that'll be just a little bonus tip at the end. The real focus is going to be around making you more productive.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this woman, non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode. So the three books that I'm going to talk about today are books that have had an impact on me when I've implemented them. And they had a deep impact on me when I listened to them, I took notes, and then I implemented the steps that were in them. My Audible account has north of 400 books in it. I listen to at least 50 books a year. I'm constantly just consuming information. Some of it is entertainment. I do listen to books about fantasy and sci-fi and such. And that's when I need a break. But a lot of the time, I'm looking to improve myself. And I found that the people I know and respect in life are constantly learning. And maybe they don't listen to a bunch of audiobooks on 2X. Maybe they just read a lot. Maybe they go to a lot of conferences or seminars, or they watch videos, or they think, or they philosophize, but they're trying to improve themselves and figuring out how to make themselves better each day. And so that's why when I look back at the list of books that I've listened to, some have had a major impact, and I have a really broad sample to draw from. So the three books I'm going to be talking about today are number one, Sleep Smarter, number two, Deep Work, and number three, The Productivity Project. So Sleep Smarter is a book by Sean Stevenson, and he takes you through his 21 steps for getting a good night's sleep. What I like about Sean is he's, in essence, a self-taught sleep expert, and he had sleep troubles. He had weight troubles and health troubles and sleep troubles growing up, and he started fixing out with diet, and then he learned that sleep was such a major impactor of how you react during the day. It's a major impactor on your mood and a huge impact on your productivity. You've heard Sherry talk about that a lot on this podcast, in her conference talks, and in her writings. And get a better night's sleep or get, 8 hours of sleep, I always kind of shrug my shoulders and think, yeah, I do that, or I don't know if I can do that or whatever. But when I listen to a book like this, it has really tactical things that overcome sleep difficulties. And the author spends, 21 chapters, if I recall. I'm kind of looking at a summary now. It's been 6 months since I've listened to it. I have some notes, but I'm looking at the summary, and there's 21 tips to improving your sleep. So the first is knowing the value of sleep, and he goes goes through all the stuff that, you know, the stuff Sherry talks about a lot, but it's how it impacts all aspects of your life. The second one, which is one that I kind of knew, but I hadn't thought about it, is get more sunlight during the day. And not only get more sunlight, because it makes you tired and it fills you with, you know, the chemicals that you need to sleep well at night, but he said, if at all possible, don't wear sunglasses. And that was a game changer for me, because I wore sunglasses all the time when I'm outside. And after reading this book, I only wear them when it's really, really bright, because he said sunglasses can strip out some of the things that go into your body and, you know, and make it aware that you're outdoors, and kind of the rich, you know, the rich chemicals that you produce are hampered by these UVA or UVB blockers. So that was an interesting kind of shift for me. The third one is to avoid screens before bedtime. I think all of us know that. Some of us follow that, but it is interesting. Their programs, I think it's called LUX, I think is what it's called, LUX or LUZ on the Mac, that will start to strip out your blue light at night, because blue light is the most harmful. It'll make it more yellow as it gets darker in your time zone, or as it gets later in your time zone. So that's one thing. But he talks a lot about, you know, he isn't just saying these one sentences. It's an entire chapter built out with research. And then he talks specifically about habits you can develop. The fourth is to have a caffeine curfew. And this is something I've long done. I don't drink caffeine after 1 o'clock. And on a bad day, it's 2 o'clock. But I think it takes up to 8 hours to get out of your system. So if you're having trouble sleeping at night, you know, don't drink caffeine after a point. And I won't go through all these, but another couple that I really liked is he talks about to make it quite cold in your room. It should be like a cave. It should be cold, quiet, and dark. And when he says dark, he means like pitch black, to get blackout curtains, because to have clocks, you know, like electric clocks that have a readout, to certainly not have any blue ones, because blue will negatively impact your sleep. Even if you're wearing an eye mask and totally blocking it out, that your body, your skin can sense light. And they've done tests where they put blue light behind someone's knee, you know, which you can't see at all. And it negatively impacted their sleep from day to day. So they've done this research. It's pretty crazy stuff. And I liked that I learned a lot of things from the book, because to be honest, I've read about how to get better night's sleep. In general, I sleep pretty well, but I have gone through times in my life where I struggle at night, or I wake up not feeling rested. And I have implemented a lot of the things that he put in here. So if that's at all of interest to you, I recommend Sleep Smarter by Sean Stevenson, and it's available, of course, in audio format or in hardcover and Kindle. The second book I want to look at is Deep Work by Cal Newport. And Deep Work really is an interesting read about the benefits and practical steps you can take to do more deep work. This is not shallow work. So deep work is the opposite of shallow work, which is when you're bouncing around, you're looking at Twitter, you're checking your email. Deep work is true productivity. It is cranking out content. It is writing copy. It is doing that deep, hard thinking where you go way into your mind and you're pulling out. It's the stuff that it's really hard to do, but it's the stuff that you're actually supposed to be doing. You know, email is a byproduct. Dancing around to Twitter is a byproduct. Deep work talks a lot about how to give yourself the space, the mental space, to do more interesting work and more work that's probably going to fulfill you. He talks about learning hard things or thinking really deeply about things, or being highly productive in a way that actually moves you forward. Again, like writing, these hard tasks can only be done when you have the concentration. And he talks about how high quality work produced equals time spent times the intensity of your focus. So if you don't have that focus, you know, if that's zero, then your time spent doesn't matter, and it's wasted. And he talks a lot about, he justifies why we should work deeply. And I'm guessing if you listen to this podcast, you already know the value of that. Like, you know the value of getting in there and writing that intense code, or, you know, of cranking out a book or a blog post. He talks about quitting social media. He talks about embracing boredom and to let your mind wander, because that will often lead you into deep work. He talks about getting rid of distractions like chat apps. Like, I think of Slack as something that is a real deep work killer. And he says, drain the shallows. He said, treat shallow work with suspicion, because its damage is often vastly underestimated and its importance vastly overestimated. This type of work is inevitable, but you must keep it confined to a point where it doesn't impede your ability to take full advantage of the deeper efforts that ultimately determine your impact. So time boxing shallow work so it does not spill into your deep work time. And so some key takeaways of deep work are, if you want to have the ability to learn hard tasks quickly and produce quality content, products, or services, you need to engage in deep work. Deep work is rare because shallow work is easier. It takes time and effort to engage in deep work, but once you start, you will experience the benefits. And there are four rules to follow if you want to maximize your productivity. Number one is to work deeply. Number two is to embrace boredom. Number three is quit social media. And number four, as I said, is to drain the shallows. I have not done this book justice at all. This book was highly encouraging and I'll say supportive of something that I've known deep down for a long time, but have a hard time articulating sometimes, especially when you're working on a team and you have Slack open and there's notifications coming through. I have long since essentially quit social media. Every once in a while I'll check in, but it's very, very infrequent. But I find myself sitting in email all the time, and it's kind of a crutch. And the logic and the research and all the stuff that Cal Newport talks about with deep work, I really do think it's not a surface level treatment. It really goes deep, and he interviews a bunch of professors and writers on how they do it and the kinds of things you can put in place to get into deep work more. So I'd encourage you, if you have not read it, check it out, as I said. And as with all the books, it's available Audible, Kindle, and paperback. Lastly, I want to talk about a book called The Productivity Project by Chris Bailey. And I actually interviewed Chris Bailey on Startups for the Rest of Us probably a couple years ago when I read this book. The thing I liked about The Productivity Project is I don't tend to like productivity books, but Chris basically ran an experiment on himself where he tested out, I think it was 100 different productivity processes or tips or systems, I should say. And he did it over the course of maybe a year. I'm trying to remember now. It's been a while since I listened to it. But the premise is, he took a bunch of them. He ran all these experiments on himself, really in a kind of Tim Ferriss way. So over the course of this time, he watched 296 TED Talks. He worked 90 hours a week some weeks based on these tips. He woke up at 5:30 a.m. every day for a while. And he basically tried to boil that all down into a few lessons. And he eventually developed this philosophy, as well as some strategies and tactics of how to be more productive and how he found himself being more productive. And my favorite lesson, I think, from the book is his realization that productivity needs three components: energy, time, and attention. And I had always known about the time and attention. This was the realization for me. I'd always thought, I need to be attentive, I can't be interrupted, and I need a lot of time to do things. But I hadn't quite connected the energy component as a separate thing from attention. And so the difference here, right, is attention is if you're not being disturbed. Time is just hours on the clock, minutes on the clock, frankly. But energy is, you know, if you've had a nice dose of caffeine, if you're feeling up, if you had a full night's sleep, if it's the morning, and finding your optimal work time, because for some people it is the evening or it's late night. Typically for most people, after lunch is the worst for most, you know, almost everybody. But he goes into a lot of discussion about how to maximize your energy, time, and attention, and, you know, ways to structure your life around that, given your constraints and how much time you have. And so attention can come back, you know, deep work, you can take a lot of lessons from there. But Chris Bailey also gives you ideas here. And then he talks about finding that optimal time of day when you will get work done. Another lesson he talks about is the rule of three and how it can help organize your schedule. The rule of three prompts you to think in three time frames. Number one, what three things do you want to accomplish today? Which three milestones do you want to complete this week? And what three goals do you hope to achieve this year? And just like that, it's a full productivity system in a nutshell. And he recommends using your calendar to implement this. I love this on a daily basis. I think that actually a lot of companies, I mean, Drip, as we are now, as we're growing, we're starting to have these weekly, monthly, and quarterly goals in essence. And we sometimes pick top three, sometimes there's more as needed, but this idea of setting goals on a shorter time frame and achieving them and working towards them, I think is a big deal. And the third lesson that I think is interesting, because it supports kind of my hypothesis and how I've run businesses for a long time. He says, there's a reason most businesses follow the 40-hour work week. He went from working 20 hours to 90 hours and found he accomplished more or less the same in both extremes. And he talks about how studies confirm the approach. They show a steep decline in workers' productivity after crossing the 55-hour mark. And after 60 hours, it takes us twice as long to accomplish whatever task. And this is a reason that I know a lot of successful bootstrap startup founders who work 30 to 40 hours a week, because the added productivity bonus of working these 9, 10, 11-hour days it just isn't worth it. Especially, you know, if you have a family, you can take that time and spend it with your spouse or just spend it hanging out with friends and get so much out of it and then come back to work recharged and you get the work done faster. So I really enjoyed this book because it kind of felt like I didn't feel like it was preachy, and I felt like it told me stuff that I hadn't thought about. And, you know, while some of the tactics that he tried are approaches that I've heard, I like that he experimented on himself, and I like how he goes through each process and talks about what failed and how he improved upon it and the things that work. So if you're looking for a book to help you kind of think that through in your own life and career, I'd recommend The Productivity Project by Chris Bailey. And finally, my bonus pick, some of my favorite books on investing. I'm actually going to give you two different options. I'm going to give you three books, but I'm going to group them into two different categories. This is how nerdy I get about investing. So if you really just want, you don't really want to think about investing, you want it to be simple, and you kind of like the, you know, the modern day kind of personal finance blogger approach, there's a book called The Simple Path to Wealth that is really well written, and I think it applies, I think it's going to really apply to kind of millennials, like if you're in 20s or, you know, maybe your 30s and you just don't want to think about it. It's a nice, simple approach, and I like it. I don't love everything about this book. He uses a return estimate of the stock market. I think it's like 11%. It might even be more than that. It's insane. It's just way, way too high. And he justifies it at the beginning, but I don't think he does a very good job of it. So take some of his stuff with a grain of salt, but the concepts that he presents are still valid, even if, you know, you assume a more realistic 8 or 9% return from the stock market. So The Simple Path to Wealth is cool. If you're a more advanced investor or you really want to dig in, I would probably skip The Simple Path to Wealth. He talks a lot about Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund, VTSAX, which is great. Again, if it's, you want to keep it simple, do that. But if you want to get in and do some asset allocation and really dig into investing concepts and start thinking more deeply about it, I have two books to recommend to you. Again, this is all on Audible, as well as you know, anything on Amazon. The two books are The Four Pillars of Investing and The Elements of Investing. And I like The Elements of Investing because it's a pretty simple introductory book, but it's definitely deeper and goes into more concepts than The Simple Path to Wealth. They intended it to be, if you've ever heard of the book by Strunk and White, The Elements of Style, it is kind of this short primer on the English language and some really, with really tactical tips. The Elements of Investing feels like that to me. And so again, if you're more advanced, it may seem simplistic, but if you're kind of moving up and want to dig in, it's definitely worth a listen. It's well written and it's very accurate. And I found that suggestion is good. The Four Pillars of Investing is one where he really digs into some, it's not even theory. I don't want to sound like a super financial nerd out, but he really talks about how asset allocation and investing over time and compound interest. And he looks at, you know, different asset types. He doesn't go into many alternative investments, which is something that I've since branched into, but this, it's really, the four pillars is something I'd really recommend as a foundational work. Even if you're, you know, from beginner all the way to advanced, like this is a book that you should have the knowledge of this book in your head if you're, you know, getting serious about being more advanced in investing your money. So that's it for today. Hope you enjoyed our journey through adding some productivity and hopefully rewarding your future self by learning more about investing. We should be back to our regularly scheduled program next week. Talk to you then.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.